It's one thing to listen to doom and gloom about food and fertilizer shortages, skyrocketing prices, the cost of living, or your job being outsourced overseas or eliminated due to automation. It's quite another thing to hear practical, immediately actionable advice from experts who can help you reduce the fear, anxiety, and burden of these problems.
Tune in now to the Surviving Hard Times podcast from the Finding Genius Foundation with Richard Jacobs. Before we begin, a note from our sponsor. I'm Richard Jacobs, Executive Director of the nonprofit Finding Genius Foundation and host of the Finding Genius podcast. In late 2016, I was rear-ended at 65 miles an hour by a truck on the highway, which sent me off-road into a ditch. The impact of the collision gave me a concussion and other injuries. At the hospital, a CT scan showed that I had thyroid nodules, which turned out to be cancer. It was then, when I had a biopsy in my neck, that I realized even if I was a millionaire, I wouldn't want a second or a third biopsy due to the pain and the invasiveness of it. And appointments at that time for thyroid experts were 3 to 6 months out, and I was worried about dying now, even if that was irrational. So because of this, I've decided to raise money to conduct a literature review on steroids, on the causes of anxiety and depression, a condition that affects well over 50 million people in the United States and hundreds of millions worldwide. Our goal is to create a codex, a guide, that reveals all possible treatments for anxiety and depression for people that live with the condition, or for loved ones that have it, as my wife and my son do. To find out more about our fundraiser, visit findinggeniusfoundation.org and click on Current Initiatives. And now, to our guest. Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Surviving Hard Times podcast, sponsored by the Finding Genius Foundation.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Surviving Hard Times podcast. I have Stacy Adams. He's a professor of horticulture, University of Nebraska, Lincoln, part of the agronomy and horticulture department. So we're going to talk about greenhouses and growing fresh food hydroponically. So welcome, Stacy.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, if you would tell me a bit about your background and how you got into this position. Are you an extension agent, or what do you do for the university?
So my current position, which I've had for about 14 years now, has been a professor of horticulture. 75% of my time is teaching in the classroom, and then 25% of my time is extension. And my area expertise is specifically in controlled environment agriculture, which is greenhouse operations and management. And then I've worked with a variety of specialty crops like hops production, exploring that. But for the last several years now, I've been working with hydroponics to address food security.
Okay. You know, I've tried in the store, hydroponic stuff, and it looks beautiful, but a lot of times it just tastes like water, and I don't know why. I guess depending on the cultivation method with hydroponics, have you or other people researched how to, tune it in so that it's as close to stuff grown outdoors and soil as possible? Or, what are the goals of hydroponics? Just maximize look and yield and size? Or, what's happening there?
Well, specifically, we're looking at productivity, so speed of production and getting it to the consumer as quickly as possible with minimal amount of environmental impacts. Oftentimes, the hydroponics that you have purchased in a lot of your merchandisers is still grown in what we call a centralized location, so wherever the environmental conditions are appropriate. So the hydroponics on your shelf may have come from Mexico or from California. So my area of specific interest is moving the production nearest where the consumers are at. And that will make a significant difference in that flavor that you're talking about. Oftentimes, these commercial shippers are needing the product to be harvested before it's really ready in order to make it through the shipping and distribution channels.
So which products or which plants, fruits, vegetables, et cetera, seem to be most amenable to hydroponics, and which ones are kind of recalcitrant and they just don't work in that environment?
So a good share of the work that is expanding quite rapidly across the United States is the diversity of products that's available. More traditionally, it's been tomatoes that you've seen, and then lettuces. However, we're expanding the collection of greens that are available. A lot of consumers really like to have the pre-washed, pre-prepared greens. So having a diverse collection of those greens is critical. With my educational programming that I do here at the university, as well as my extension outreach, we need to understand the diversity in our culture and the different people that we're trying to reach. So we have been doing eggplant, a variety of different types of peppers. Cucumbers are very traditional. And then I know there's probably some other types of melons that people are producing. Crops. So I'm in a state, Nebraska, in which it's a very strong agronomic crop type of production area. And I don't restrict my students. So some of them have tried corn, but that doesn't make any sense whatsoever because you have such a huge plant for the return on what you have there. So yeah, actually hydroponics is quite versatile because there's many different types of systems and approaches we can use. Our greatest limitation, one, is going to be the structure itself. So that's the greenhouse and what the qualities are associated with it. And then what we call improved seed. So some of the crops that we might be interested in growing don't do well because the plant does not have the resistances built into it that it needs for like disease or high humidity situations. So this is a very interesting area for research for people to expand on product availability.
Okay. Yeah. Like how would you ever do a fruit tree or something that takes multi-years to produce? Could that ever be done hydroponically?
Yeah, you know, there are approaches to doing hydroponics with trees, but keep in mind that the whole reason we're doing productivity hydroponically is in order to prescriptively dose in like the water and nutrients needed to grow the plant. So we want the plant to grow in its most efficient way in order to be productive. When you start talking about woody materials, we have plants that have to oftentimes go through some sort of a rest period or dormancy. And that's not cost effective for most of our greenhouse designs. Keeping in mind, I'm in the Midwest where we have winter. So there are other places across the world where they use hydroponics more specifically to deal with the environmental issues they have, such as lack of availability of water. And if you get into the Middle East, they have to desalinify water. So they want the maximum efficiency of those plants. So yeah, we could pretty much grow anything we want, but usually the hydroponics approach is going to align with what the specific needs are of the particular location and the crops that are desired.
I've heard about aeroponics and I've seen it. Is that at all viable, you know, where the roots are just hanging in the air and you're spraying them with, you know, with water, with fertilizer and stuff in it? Is that anything major or are there just fundamental problems with it where it's not really useful?
Actually, it is extremely useful, and you'll see it over in China and Japan in areas that we have very high population centers where they want to produce plants in land-limiting areas. So oftentimes what we call the urbanization of farmlands causes a problem. So when we move into controlled environment agriculture, which could be factory production, aeroponics is extremely appropriate for that situation because we can grow plants vertically. So we can stack them on top of each other. So we can have like 10 or more trays going upwards. So by going to aeroponics, what we've done is we've eliminated the weight of water and we have provided an atmospheric mist of nutrient-enriched air in it. But as we're all thinking today about hydroponics, one of the greatest limitations we have is the investment associated with it. And we can talk about that more here in a minute, but it takes some sort of investment to make it happen. And when we start talking aeroponics, that's probably one of the approaches that's going to be the most cost prohibitive for most people. So when I have seen aeroponics, it has been very intentional production systems that uses a team of investors to make sure it happens. When you move into other countries such as China, the government will, you know, it's to their benefit to have food available. So sometimes that's where the government programs actually assist in making food be more affordable when they're in line with that production system.
So what, I don't know, what are some of the, well, I guess I don't know if they're research questions, but what are some of the goals that you personally are working on? Like, you know, which kinds of plants and what's the specific goals?
So keep in mind that I'm primarily just in the education arena. So basically higher ed education. I work with youth education programs because as we consider our environmental changes, we have to come up with alternative food production systems that are sustainable. And the only way that we can get acceptance through time is by making sure that we work with all ages. So though I work with college students, I have programs and published materials available for schools and educators to utilize in order to align it with the school scientific outcomes, but also understanding where the applications are on it. Related to research, I am connected with a consortium of researchers or faculty across the nation, and where they're exploring various things. Of great interest by a lot of consumers is organic food production, and that does pose a problem when we get into hydroponics because of food safety. And you probably have been to the store before where the shelves were empty because lettuce wasn't available or tomatoes weren't available because there was a recall. Well, oftentimes that's directly related to food safety. So the traditional production method is to use synthetic formulations of fertilizers, but there are various approaches organically that people are interested. So that's a big area of interest. And then, of course, product development as far as identifying more diversity of crops that can be available. We always want efficiencies in our system. So remote sensing or robotics is a critical component in order to keep food affordable and safe and available. We do have to have a certain amount of automation. And in horticultural crops, that is a limiting factor. In the agronomic sector, oftentimes equipment has been custom designed for large field production. But when we move into a closed production system, we're still in a lot of developmental stages.
What about the greenhouses that, you know, that the systems these hydroponic plants are grown in? What about the design and construction? You know, you spoke about automation. What are some of the new innovations in greenhouse design, let's say?
Yeah, so I'm getting along in my years in the greenhouse industry. So I've been doing this over 40 years now. And when I started, the greenhouses, we were closing them up. They used to have natural ventilation, and then we closed them up to make them a really tight and enclosed environment. And the significant trend over the last 10 years, now that we better understand plant needs and we're considering the cost associated with electricity, and greenhouse design is ever improving. You'll see oftentimes, if you see a large greenhouse operation, you'll notice that the roof line has gone very high. We used to only have 8 or 10 foot high sidewalls, and now they're 16 or 20 feet high. You'll also notice that the roofs open up, and through a lot of engineering and understanding and basically the ability to monitor environment and do what I call predicting. So predicting what weather changes are happening. So a lot of automation has really greatly advanced our industry. As I said, another thing that's really critical is reducing the cost or labor associated with it. So on the inside of the greenhouse, remote sensing is a term that you might hear of. It's basically, you know, optical sensing, like cameras that can monitor plant material, can basically do non-destructive tissue analysis and make sure that, you know, the plants are produced well. And then a lot of automated systems to move product around so humans aren't touching things. So yeah, it's a pretty awesome industry to see. You can't get into hydroponic production houses. I even as a professor in the area can't even get in. I've only been in a couple of them because you have to remember that you're kind of almost like in a medical surgical room. You know, they don't want to have outside contaminants coming into their facilities. So it is pretty intensive production system. And by doing that, they reduce the amount of chemicals that they rely on in order to control for diseases or insects. Many of the products that you see on the store shelves have never had pesticides put onto them, basically because of this ability to completely contain the production system.
Good, yeah. What about like a nutritional analysis or, you know, composition analysis of a strawberry grown hydroponically versus one outside? Has anyone done that? And, you know, what are some of the major differences?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. There are researchers that are working on, one, improving the nutritional qualities of hydroponic. Also, I know the medical industry is interested in this. Is there a way that we can utilize the hydroponic solution as a way to bump up like vitamins naturally into the material that we're going to be consuming? So I'm at an institution, you know, with all educational institutions, you know, our hands are kind of limited of how many things that we can have on hand. And so, yeah, we don't want investors to forget that education is a key component to making these linkages happen. But one of the projects I have my students work on is they do a comparison trial of lettuce between that grown in field soil in a modified formulated potting mix, we call it, and hydroponics. So we did tissue analysis on it. And you're right, the nutrition is different between that grown in the field and that in hydroponics. The thing that you have to kind of remember, though, is it's not just the nutritional qualities, but it's also the aesthetic appeal and the palatability. And though when we got tissue analysis back, there was a significant quality difference between that grown in the field and that grown hydroponically, it was like eating shoe leather for the material that was grown outdoors. So there is a careful balance that's got to happen in this productivity. When we did the formulated potting mixes, it was nearing hydroponic production, but we improved the nutrient quality a bit. So
what was anything missing in the hydroponics, or was it just different, you know, nutrition-wise? What were the major differences?
The major difference was how much you would have to eat to get the same amount of nutrition. So that makes a ton of sense, because if we're hydroponics, you know, we have all this water available, so everything's diluted. And this is a great conversation to have, because you could have this conversation with the medical industry. We've chatted about it as colleagues here at the university. Is it's not necessarily a bad thing that there's not quite as many nutrients in there, because many times when we eat foods, we're filling ourselves with empty carbs and things that are not good for us. So you wouldn't want to consume lettuce or some of these produce as your only food source, but it is a component of the entire diet. And so, you know, there's more aspects, but you are correct. We do need to have good flavor, but it's also the aesthetic qualities that go with, you know, with a well-balanced meal. So that's a great point.
Were there any surprising differences in what was the constituency of hydroponic versus, you know, outdoor grown whatevers, you know, whatever plants you looked at?
Well, we were looking also, we used a SPAD meter, which is one that measures, it's kind of a comparison tool that we use to compare chlorophyll content. And then, of course, we didn't do any flavor research, so we were just looking at the mineral elements. So, you know, what minerals did the plant take up? And, you know, when you grow in soils, we're not really adding minerals, because soils are already made up of minerals. We just prescriptively add anything missing, so mainly nitrogen and some of that. When you get into hydroponics, though, we have to add every single nutrient. So this is an area of research that needs to continue to happen. And I'm a plant person, plant growing, but we have to work with the medical industry, the people that look at diet. And it's that relationship between the medical industry and the growers that we can adapt hydroponics in order to bump up those nutritional qualities we're looking for. You do have to remember, though, you know, it might sound like, well, this is a no-brainer. Let's grow in the soil. Well, a problem we have with soil-grown items, and I told you a little bit ago, it was about food safety. We don't have any control about birds pooing on our stuff and, you know, rabbits and all that, which there's a splash factor and thing. But another thing is if we deal with contaminated soils, if we moved food production into the cities, we're dealing with soils that might be heavy in lead and things like that. And plants will draw that up. So we've got to watch out for, you know, products that we don't want in our food. So it's a very interesting area to study, because we take for granted the food we eat that's being grown on the field and we think it's all safe. But if you were to do analysis and do some comparisons, you would find out that it just depends on where it's grown and how it's grown. Some will have more nutrients than others, and some might be a little bit too heavy on some things that we shouldn't be consuming. So hydroponics gives us that opportunity to align with what we need, and hopefully with this relationship with the medical industry, we can maybe bump up some of the vitamins and things that we'd like to see naturally.
Okay. So do you think like aeroponics is viable, or just economically it's not nearly as feasible as hydroponics is what it seems to be from your previous comment?
Actually, I was just in Virginia at a conference. There's the Indoor Ag Conference. There's one out in the east, and there's one coming up here in Las Vegas pretty soon. And as I said, the greatest limitation oftentimes is the infrastructural costs associated with it. Really, we're not doing anything different with aeroponics other than we've just removed the large volumes of water. Now we have a chamber which is humidified basically with water, and the nutrient elements are enriched on that water particle, and the plant roots will still take it up. Let me give you a quick example. As I said, I work with a diversity of students that have different pathways of interest. And a component of this course I teach is I let them create a prototype system for hydroponics. I had some students that decided they wanted to do pinto beans, and I didn't tell them no. I wanted them to explore it. And they did aeroponics with the pinto beans, and it worked very successfully. I was a little surprised and had to think about it scientifically, but it made sense. I used to manage greenhouses for a research facility, and we grew beans for 24 years. And beans are one plant that don't like what we call wet feet. They don't like to be submerged in water. So beans wouldn't grow well in a typical solution-based hydroponics. They would need to be either in what we call a substrate-based hydroponic or aeroponics, and the aeroponics was awesome. The plants performed superbly, so I called that a success for the student project.
What about a hydroponic system, you know, like, let's say an NFT system or something like that, where the water stops periodically and instead like a mist is pumped through the pipes? So it looks like hydroponic / aeroponic. It kind of you know, it alternates so that there's not so much water used. Does that system exist?
Actually, you know, you're basically talking of an aeroponics. The NFT, which is nutrient film technique, is a thin film. Basically, we have a chamber. It's a closed gutter, if you will. And the plant is suspended in that tight gutter. And the root tips are just kind of laying in that little stream of water. You probably, if you go on the internet, there's all sorts of not great information out there, and you shouldn't be doing NFT cyclic. It should be a continuous operating system. So the solution should always be flowing through an NFT. The aeroponics approach you just talked about, you know, that's a matter of fogging the chamber. So that one does have to be monitored, determined, you know, whether that chamber needs to be fogged or not, because you don't want to create so much volume, you need, end up with a lot of water. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of approaches to do hydroponics. I, working in an institution of higher ed, we have a relationship with some students from Rwanda. We worked with them for about 6-year period. And, you know, one of the things that I learned from Rwanda students, and I had some Indian students, is that when you get into these countries that are emerging in, you know, how their infrastructure is, oftentimes electricity is one of the biggest challenge they're dealing with, whether it's going to be consistently on or if there's interruptions. So aeroponics and NFT does not work well when you have any sort of interruptions in your supply. So when we start looking at situations where, you know, we're concerned, it could even be in rural Nebraska where we don't have, you know, you've got many miles of electric lines, and the potential for an outage could impact your production facility within hours if you don't have power. So that is one of the decision-making processes when somebody sets up a hydroponics operation, is what we call resiliency in the system. So can the plant survive for a period of time without having a cycle? So yeah, these are all great questions to consider when we design it.
Oh, in rural areas, why not have like a water tower? So you have a head of water that can continue the system if there's an outage for a couple hours.
Yeah, you could do that. Water is a concern. So how we're going to reserve the water, having towers, you know, that's quite an infrastructural item to put in. You know, oftentimes hydroponics, they're going to store the water below, you know, the ground, because it's easier to have tanks on the ground level. So you're dealing with this pump situation. A lot of the big hydroponic places that I've seen in the Midwest, specifically for greens and lettuces, are using what we call deep water culture. And that's a very resilient system. You could be without power probably 3 days and it wouldn't really affect the crop because they're just floating on the solution.
Quick question comes to mind. Does anyone oxygenate the water that's used in a hydroponic system, whether it's deep water culture, floating mats, NFT, whatever? And if so, does that make a big difference?
It does make a significant difference. So it's not really oxygen. We're just using aeration of some type. For example, when I was telling you about the Rwandan student, we designed a gravity feed deep water culture system to explore for him. And though we could grow plants, they were a little bit different than those that we had aerated the water. So we came up with a plan that was simply done where we just transferred water from one bucket, put it at the other, and did a back flush. But if you could oxygenate it or aerate it, as we say, using air bubblers, you will see a significant difference. I don't know what the actual weight difference is, but visually plants appear to be much healthier, more rigid leaf texture and fuller. So that would be interesting to study. But we don't always have to use an aerator, because I do use some, and we have 7 different prototypes for the students to work with. But sometimes it's just a matter of having the water flow. So in one of our deep water culture systems, we just have water pumping into one end at all times, and then at the other end, it drops to a lower tank, and it's the splash process that aerates the water. So water movement is a key component in order to get that aeration that we need.
Yeah, I guess you could have a hydroponic system where you have little waterfalls or cascades or drop-offs so that it encourages aeration, you know, as it flows through the system. Maybe you could just do that with a gravity-type system from top to bottom, it flows. There's a lot of design elements, I'm sure. Sounds like it's interesting.
Yep, that's true. Mm.
Okay, well, very good. Where can people see more examples of the work you and the students are doing? Where can they go?
So they can definitely go to our university website, which is, I think it's listed as agronomy.unl.edu, and they can find me there. I have some published items that's free access through something called Digital Commons. So I don't have that address right handy here, but I have a couple things that I'm ever adding. And then I made a YouTube channel specifically for outreach to, I'm working with a native tribe, the Omaha Nation, on they want food sovereignty for their reservation. And we've explored aquaponics with them, but aquaponics is very challenging to do. So we're starting them out through hydroponics. And so I've created a YouTube channel that's public access, and it's under Stacy Adams on YouTube. So, I mean, you can kind of see some of that. I mean, I'm going to be building onto that YouTube channel so that as an extension outreach person, I'm giving programs all the time. And I thought, you know, it seems like a dead spot for my presentations to just do it once and done. So I'm going to be spending some time capturing various topics to load into there.
Well, very good. Well, Stacy, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been a good talk.
All right. Well, thank you.
Before you stop listening, ask yourself, what are one or two useful things you heard on this podcast that can help you overcome food and fertilizer shortages, skyrocketing prices, the cost of living, or your job being outsourced overseas or eliminated due to automation? Please like and subscribe and tell your friends and family about their Surviving Hard Times podcast. We're all going to need help now and in the near future.